Hi everyone, it's me, the Outspoken Cyclist. I just wanted to take a moment or two to remind you that the Outspoken Cyclist is now a listener-sponsored show. Over the past few weeks, many of you have shown your support with your donations as well as kind words and enthusiastic encouragement. If you like what you hear each week and find the show worthwhile, won't you please consider making a small donation? I've created a special donor link on my blog, OutspokenCyclist.com, that allows you to choose either a set amount or input any other amount with which you feel comfortable. The link is secure, and the payment page will take you to either PayPal or a credit card button. Once again, that link is OutspokenCyclist.com, and the donor link is at the top of the page in the menu section as well as on the sidebar. Whatever your choice, please know that I appreciate your feedback and will continue to work hard to bring you the best conversations that I can and hope that you continue to listen to the show. Thanks.
Time for the Outspoken Cyclist, your weekly conversation about bicycles, cycling, and related topics. The Outspoken Cyclist is produced for broadcast and podcast, with a new show available every Saturday at 6 p.m. In Northeast Ohio, you can hear it on WJCU 88.7 FM. Catch our podcast after the close of the on-air show at OutspokenCyclist.com, iTunes, Stitcher, or PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Now here's your host, Diane Jenks.
Hello, welcome to the Outspoken Cyclist. I'm your host, Diane Jenks, and this is our show for September 22nd, 2018. If you are hearing this on the 22nd, two of my guests this evening are exhibiting at the Builders Ball in Boston as you listen. The third, who is actually my first this evening, broke a world record this week. Vittoria Bussi, who is 31 and has a doctorate in pure mathematics from Oxford University, rode 48.007 kilometers in 1 hour on the Aguascalientes Velodrome in Mexico on September 13th, beating the previous record set by Evelyn Stevens in 2016. This was Victoria's third attempt. She just missed the mark in 2017 by 404 meters, and the day before she broke the record this week, she stopped at 44 minutes in because of a pain in her diaphragm. She's passionate, she's wicked smart, and she is shy, but we'll let her tell you the rest. After a break, we're going to take a short trip to Annapolis, Maryland, to speak with Igor Stenbuck from Velo Orange. Velo Orange is a big sponsor of the Builders Ball, and Igor, who owns the company along with his wife Adrian, graciously filled me in on some history, product, and what's new in inventory. Finally, I speak with Ryan Johnson. Ryan has been around a lot and done a lot, from working alongside his carpenter father as a child and learning how to handle tools, to learning all the basics of bicycles and bicycle building. Ryan has lots of street cred. He did a gig as a mobile mechanic and became part of the marketing team for Competitive Cyclist. Not too long ago, Ryan and his wife moved to Vermont. He spent some time building a house, and now he's committed himself to building bikes. He'll tell you all about his company, Galaxy Gearworks, when we speak later in the show. So first it's off to Italy to speak with world champion Vittoria Bussi. Hello, Vittoria. Welcome to the Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks for joining me on the show today. Congratulations on your amazing record.
Hello, Diane. Thank you very much for this conversation.
It is my pleasure. So can we actually back up a little bit before we talk about our record and talk a little bit about you? There's something I know you're wicked smart. You're a doctor of pure mathematics, and I don't understand that at all. What is pure mathematics? What does that mean?
Well, it's mathematics is everywhere, but we cannot see it it's fascinating because it's the contact with reality. It's quite far. So my particular specialization was in geometry, and you would think I'm studying like everything we see, so geometric figure or structure. But the reality is that when you then specialize more and more, you start to study n-dimensional structure. So we just can see three-dimensional stuff. So can you imagine to study like whatever number of dimension structure? So it's the contact with reality is really, really far. But at some point, there are some contact with physics in some application.
Okay, I think I understand that. Obviously, you're an athlete as well as a mathematician. And reading some of the things about you, I learned that you did some triathlon, that you were a long distance runner. How did you begin bicycling?
Well, it was just in a transition moment of my life, because I was a runner until 23 years old in Italy, when I had to move to Oxford for the PhD in mathematics. And then with the study and everything, I decided to just stop the sport and concentrate like full time in mathematics. But you know, when you are born like in an agonistic way, you cannot just like keep up with the sport. So I tried triathlon, which is very popular in England, and so I found cycling, and in a race duathlon, so running and cycling, my fraction of cycling was really good. So Flavio Zappi, who is an next professional rider, an Italian one, he moved to Oxford, saw me in duathlon, and he suggested me to start focusing in cycling because I was quite good. So everything started from that duathlon, basically.
Run and bike.
Yes.
So no swimming. So you didn't do swim, bike, run?
I did some training in swimming. The goal would have been to do some triathlon later on, but it was in January. So in the winter time, at the beginning, you do some duathlon because swimming, you know, in the winter, it's not really fun. So I remember that January, there was a duathlon race, and I just did it.
And you just did it. Okay. That, you know, some people train forever to do some of the things you do, and you just do it. You've only been riding 5 years. You're pretty amazing. I wanted you to kind of back up and tell us, why did you choose the hour record as a goal? What was it about the hour that sort of compelled you to train for it?
I have to say thanks to my sport director in the past, because when I was in a professional UCI team in Italy, many people in the environment saw me and told me that I could have been like the right one to try to break the world hour record. I always was quite good in time trial, but I couldn't really express myself at 100% because my back handling is not so good as professional athlete that started to cycle in a young age. I started just at 27 years old, and at that age, you're not so brave anymore like a child. So you never learn perfectly how to stay in a bunch, how to do, for example, a roundabout without braking. So I always lose a lot of time on the road because these technicalities that I'm not able. So something good, for example, is the track. When you have a fixed gear, you don't have to brake. Every lap is the same. You need some technicality, obviously, also there, because you need to be on the black line. So the trajectory is something you have to really work on it. But it's just that. On the road, there are so many things to think about. So I decided that could have been actually a good long-term trial for me, not too technical. So a good option.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. Let me remind our listeners, we're speaking with Vittoria Bussi. She is in Turin, Italy. She set the one-hour UCI record at 48.007 kilometers this week. Woohoo! Very exciting stuff. So how did you end up choosing the Aguascalientes Velodrome in Mexico as opposed to a velodrome in Italy, where you are?
That was really... I have to think a lot about this decision because, you know, Mexico is on the other side of the world and you would like to have some support of your family, friend, when you do the hour. And instead, I was there alone with my boyfriend. We were just I and him. So the reason is that the velodrome we have in Italy, Montichiari, has been closed. Because there are some, for some security reason that are not good. Some security check have been violated. For example, when it rains, the roof cannot contain the rain, so the truck will be wet when it's raining. So, which is really dangerous. So they decided to close the truck. In Europe, the trackers are really, really expensive. They can ask like 200 euro for just 1 hour training, which is, if you imagine that you have to train like twice a week at least and book the track for an entire day for the hour, the cost is really a lot. In Mexico, the thing is that, first of all, it's much more economical. Is much more cheap because like 200 euro and you can train for the entire month whenever you want. And the second reason is that the weather is really predictable in Mexico. So there is always a time of the day when the sun come out and that period is a good one because the velodrome is warm. And no ventilation inside, no air conditioning to warm up the velodrome. So you really need the sun to have a warm velodrome. And the temperature is important for a successful hour attempt because, as you know, the air density plays an important role in this kind of attempt. So these are the main reason. Obviously, people think also that I was in Mexico because altitude helped to have a lower air density, so it's faster. But I keep saying that altitude is not always an advantage because it depends how your body reacts to the altitude. So personally, the altitude is not really good for me. So I wouldn't say that my primary reason was the altitude. I think it's really the last one.
I'm not good at altitude either. It takes me a long time to get used to being that high up, like 5,000 feet, 6,000 feet. So you did some things with your diet and your nutrition to help you get in shape for this too. What did you do different? I know that there's a ketone supplement you take. I don't know what that is exactly.
Yeah, I met my sponsor, Human, based in California a few months ago, and their support was so invaluable. They are like really a good team, and my coach, Tom Kirk, did some study in Oxford about this ketone, and so he proposed me to try it. So we got in contact with Human. And they guided me into this ketone drinking. So basically, in really few words, ketone is something that your body produces when you are out of carbohydrates. So if you are fasted, your body to produce energy produces ketone. Now, if you are in cycling or in any sports, if you are fasted, you are not performing well. But if you eat, you cannot produce ketone. So they decide to create this integration. So you can eat like carbs and protein and whatever you need as usual for your competition, and then integrate before the competition the ketone that your body wouldn't produce because you're not fasted. So you have this double source of energy. The taste is not good. That's the only bad point. But, you know, the improvement in training is really good. So that was really a good improvement in my diet. For the rest, I have to say I'm Italian, so I like to eat. So if there is a pizza, I will not say no because I'm my training. So I was careful in my diet, but not obsessive.
That's good. I think that's healthy. Just mentally, it's healthy, if nothing else. So let me remind our listeners again, we're speaking with Victoria Busi. She set the world UCI hour record on a track in Mexico this week. It's so exciting to be able to talk with her today. I was particularly interested in how your trainer helped change your position. So you were not able to complete the hour record and win last fall, but you came back and did it this fall. What changed in the position on your bike?
Yes, well, we were not really expert last year. And so we did the mistake that usually people do. So we take the advantage of a really aerodynamic and extreme position, sacrificing the biomechanic in the sense that my body was really aero, but couldn't stay in that position for long. So I get injured. My body was really suffering for that. But, you know, it's something that if you are not expert enough in this kind of things, you need like months and months of study. And also it's good to have a support of a wind tunnel. So when I met Endura and Drag to Zero, we organized after the first attempt wind tunnel test in Bragli, the wind tunnel of Mercedes Pedronas under the guidance of Simon Smart. And I will not thank him enough, never, because he was so supportive and it's so good to speak to him. He's a genius. And so we did this test and we changed the position and we find a really good compromise between the aero position and the biomechanic. So I could push more power for longer time.
What kind of bike were you riding?
It's a Giant Liv. So Liv is the brand of Giant for women. They have this nice thing that they have the brand is called Liv for the frame for women. And it's really nice, you know, to always put in evidence our women world, even with color, just with color, because the geometry of the frame is the same. But, you know, it's nice to have a bike for us, which is different from men. Again, just in color, for example, I have this violet thing in my frame, which I love them. The frame is actually a advanced Trinity frame, so a really famous frame.
Did you find yourself afraid on the track ever?
I am always afraid of the track. Like, every time I jump in the truck, like really, I'm serious. Every time, the first 10 minutes, I have to stay on the blue band down, take confidence with the bike, think that, yes, I can do, breathe, and then jump on the bank up and speeding up lap by lap. And this is something that is kind of stressful because every time I'm scared, but on the other side, it's also nice to have this constant adrenaline. You know, I'm never bored on the track. That's the point. People get bored on the track. I'm never bored.
Did I understand that you listen to something or do you not? Is that something so I was reading Beppe's articles about you on the Turismo site. I thought I understood that you might listen to something, that you have a playlist. Is that true?
Yes. I have a playlist. People make fun of me because it's really disco music. I really like to dance. When I wasn't an athlete, I was used to go to the disco to dance like many other girls. And so I still enjoy that kind of music. And so during the attempt, I put my playlist and the music was really, really loud and was so nice to have this velodrome that was like a discotheque. So it was really exciting.
I totally understand. I know you get a lot of support from Rocco. How does he feel? How does he feel now that you've reached this goal? What, I mean, he must have been over the moon, yes?
Yes. The thing is that I think we still have to realize that we did it. I remember that the night he was more tired than me, but we couldn't sleep. So we were in the bed. We didn't even party a lot because we were so tired. We were like empty. So we were like in the bed and we were asking each other, are you sleeping? No, I cannot sleep. And you? No, I cannot sleep. It's like too much adrenaline. And the day after also we were like zombie, you know, from in like two zombies in Mexico. And, it was really, really good to have this thing together. It's something I think particular because, you know, working with your boyfriend or working with a girlfriend, it's really hard because you fight so hard. But for us was a success.
This is just such a wonderful conversation. I'm really enjoying it. So, okay, now you've done the hour record. What's next? Are you teaching or are you... It's going to stay on the bike. What are you going to do?
Well, okay. My next near goal will be the Italian championship time trial in October.
Oh, cool.
And then I really plan at least 2 weeks off from the bike because I really need like a bit of rest mentally and physically and go to visit my mom finally in Rome. Enjoy some rest. And next, I still have to speak with my sponsor, see if we can still cooperate for some other goal. I don't know. I'm not thinking about going back to research in mathematics because, you know, I'm starting to be older, so there will be many young researchers in mathematics smarter than me at the moment. So, but I would come back to teach. At university level or just maybe doing some private lesson for university students. So I still have to understand and in the meantime, I would also like to have a family with Rocco. So there are many, many plans. It's good. It's exciting. So it will be a new life in any case. Because
yes.
Now the goal is done and we need to look ahead.
My last question has to do with people who have dreams like yours, a young girl or a young boy who says, I want to do something like that. What would you tell them? What would you give them as a piece of advice?
Well, it's the first thing that come to my mind, which is like, a sentence that we read many times everywhere is like that nothing is impossible, which is, you know, it's something again that we heard so much about this sentence, but it's really true that at the beginning it looked like impossible, but if you are like ready to sacrifice everything, and when I say everything, it's everything. If you want to devote yourself to something that impossible will be possible at some point. So at some point you will see the light of the tunnel. The most important point is that you really need to want it and put this as a priority in your life. No matter what you have to sacrifice, it always has to be your priority. Otherwise, you will not get it.
Good advice. Well, Vittoria, I really appreciate you talking with me. I know you have been talking to journalists and sponsors and people for days now, and I hope you get some rest. And thank you for doing such a great thing for women. It's been a very interesting week for women. You know, Denise Mueller broke the land world speed record the same week you broke the hour record.
That's so good. So the best thing is to inspire other women to pursue the dreaming.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much. Have a great night. And maybe we'll talk again soon.
Thank you, Diane, and have a good afternoon.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Vittoria Bussi. Join me from Turin, Italy, where she lives with her husband, Rocco, who supports her efforts 100%. You can find out more about Vittoria's achievement pretty much everywhere you search on the internet. So let's take a short break, and when we return, we're going to talk with Igor Steinbuch from Velo Orange. You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist.
You're listening to the station that is your home for college radio in Cleveland, 88.7 FM, WJCU University Heights.
We are back. I'm your host, Diane Jenks, and you're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist. Before they left for Boston for the Builders Ball, I wanted to make sure we acknowledge the support the Velo Orange has given the show. You see, in turn, with all the exhibitors and attendees, the East Coast Greenway benefits from the proceeds of the show. And since I'm a proud member of the East Coast Greenway board, I thought it might be a good idea to highlight some of these nice folks. Here's my short but pretty inclusive conversation with Igor Stenbuch. Hello, Igor. Welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks for joining me on the show today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. Velo Orange. So I remember the first time I saw the name. I have no idea where the name comes from. How did you come up with Velo Orange, and what does it mean?
So, yeah, there's a lot of lore and mystique that brought about the name, but it's actually the founder, Chris Kolchitsky. He had an orange Bisou bicycle, and orange Velo didn't sound as good, so Velo Orange became the name. You know, we kind of originated in doing a lot of French and Japanese inspired components and accessories, so that's kind of where it came out.
Okay, so it's really not all that mysterious once you break it down.
Not all that much, no.
All right, well, tell us a little bit about you and Adrian, and you two sort of run the show there.
Yes, we do. Yeah. So we both started riding all through college as transportation and a little bit of fun on the side. And then I shortly got a job at a local shop that specialized in high-end vintage and custom bikes and builds. And want to give a little shout out to College Park Bike here in Maryland.
Mr. Larry Black.
Mr. Larry Black, exactly. Yeah.
He and I are good friends. So that's nice.
Excellent.
To know that's where you started. Yeah, good for you.
Oh, thank you. And then when we started working at Velo Orange, gosh, almost 7 years ago, we got more and more into touring and more and more into commuting and the kind of higher end sort of side of the bike world. In 2015, we got married on our overseas bike tour through Denmark, Germany, and Sweden. And ever since then, we've just tried to integrate touring into every trip we take. And then almost 2 years ago, we bought the company from Chris Kolchitsky and Annette Najjar. Since then, we've had a kid, and now we're integrating him into all of our travels that we take. So it's been a bit of a wild ride.
Yeah. Wow. You know, life just evolves quick.
It does. Yeah. It goes real fast.
It does.
But
it's
a lot of fun.
Well, it's cool that you are keeping that vintage business alive, and I like seeing it. I can remember, I think the first thing we ever bought from Velo Orange was a set of fenders.
And yes.
I know it's still probably a huge category for you. Tell us a little bit. I know that you're not really that new to the company, but track it through this decade and a half or so since they started with just a few items. And then where you are today, which is just so different.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
It is and it isn't. I mean, certainly you've kept the same sort of philosophy, but the size of the company is just so different.
We didn't have, you know, the 700 plus SKUs that we have today. And when we started really just making bell mounts and light mounts, little odds and ends, stuff like that. And we started importing new old stock components and accessories, handlebars, fenders, from various sources. And, you know, those sources dried up. And so we simply couldn't get those products anymore. And then we started redesigning, you know, looking at obviously the original product, but also looking at old drawings, schematics, you know, Revor books, and just, you know, getting more and more ideas. Since then, we've just kind of taken off with it. And, you know, we've done a lot of designing our own components and accessories and frames, you know, to our specs. And, you know, still with obviously a nod to the classic side with a lot of elegant you know, designs and stuff like that. So yeah, here we are today.
Who is doing the actual drawing that would then get to a manufacturer and then produced for you?
We do everything in-house.
Yeah, no, I understand. I was wondering which one of you does
that. Oh, yeah, yeah. As far as the design goes, everybody has our say into the way that things are designed. We all have experience from various disciplines within cycling, mostly touring, commuting. So we all have a really good idea of what works and what doesn't work and, you know, how to test things out. Clint does a lot of the CAD drawing so that we can actually put a file in and send the stuff off to the various manufacturers we work with. But as far as the design and the prototyping process, we all have hands in it.
How many people are at Velo Orange these days?
So we have 6 employees.
Nice.
And a 10-month-old and a dog.
There you have it. It doesn't work without the dog, or evidently these days, the 10-month-old, which is really cool. So he's just about in everything.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah. Let me remind our listeners, we're speaking with Igor Steinbuch. How's that? Was that pretty good?
Okay. That was great, yeah.
Oh, good. From Velo Orange. And anyone who has been sort of in the touring, randonneuring part of our world, which many, if not most of our listeners are, knows what comes out of Velo Orange. I'll bet you probably have something on your bike that is from Velo Orange, like fenders or something like that. So what is your most popular category?
I would definitely say, like you said, fenders are a big, big seller of ours.
Yeah.
Fenders, handlebars, handlebar accessories, like grips and bells and stuff like that. I would say racks as well. A lot of the restoration stuff. In particular, quilt stems, inch threaded headsets, 126 freewheel hubs.
Wow.
Like that. And more recently, we've introduced our Main USA luggage line. And so that's been a real good seller for us as well.
Nice. Let's talk a little bit about a frame. Is it polyvalent? Is that how you say
mm-hmm.
it?
Yep.
Okay. It comes in, I'm trying to remember, I'm not looking at the website. It comes in maybe 4 sizes or 5 sizes.
Yeah, 51, 54, 57, and 60.
And it's very classic. So where did the idea to actually come out with your own bike come from? It's like, I guess it's the next logical step.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, we wanted, you know, obviously we've been importing and designing all these components and accessories. And, you know, we want something that, you know, we also want to hang all of our bits on.
Right. Okay. True.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's the polyvalent is actually our longest-running frame set. We started it in with just a very simple cantilever brake, horizontal dropout, 1-inch threaded headset, and we had a couple iterations of it. And then we kind of put it on the shelf for a while to focus on redesigning it. And then earlier this year, we released it. And it's been a really, really popular frame set of ours. And, I mean, it's a kind of do-it-all all-rounder, as they say.
Right.
Makes a great rando bike, touring bike, commuter. And just it's just a fun bike and platform to really, you know, kind of build it out however you want.
Are you starting to see some business, or should I say direction toward PBP next year? People starting to talk about the brevets and
A lot of people have, you know, already started outfitting their bike for how they're gonna actually do the event. So yeah, I mean you definitely don't want to start mixing stuff up right before a long brevet like that. So yeah, they're getting it done early, and really setting it up.
Cool, very cool. If people would like to know more about Velo Orange, you will be at Builder's Ball. What are you taking? You taking anything that nobody has seen yet? Anything new?
Yeah, we actually just the other day we released 3 new handlebar styles. I'm a little bit more on the modern side. We have our Nuvo Randonneur handlebar, which is a drop bar with slightly longer ramps, but the tops actually sweep back a little bit, so it's a little bit shorter of a reach. Ovalized top section, so you have a lot of real estate for your hands to sit on, and a bit of shorter of a drop. We also have 2 upright bars, one that's a little bit more upright, and we're calling the curvy one. And the other one is it's a flatter bar, a little bit wider, and it's called the Curvy 2.
Curvy Pervy. That's nice. Actually, I saw them all on the website, and they are really nice-looking bars. Let me ask you something about business. Are you going to be affected by the tariffs?
At this point, we aren't, because the majority of our stuff is made in Taiwan.
Uh-huh.
And as much as China wants to, you know, recognize that Taiwan is part of their country, as far as we understand it, the government in our current administration views Taiwan as a independent nation, for all intents and purposes. Everything that we've read kind of shows that Taiwan shouldn't be affected, at least at this point.
Right, right. Yeah, I think I read that, in fact, the U.S. is one of the only countries that is still recognizing Taiwan as being independent and wanting to keep it that way. It's kind of interesting, actually.
Yeah, it definitely is.
Yeah.
From a business standpoint, you know, it's good that it's not, that we're not going to, that we shouldn't see those tariffs.
Let's hope it stays that way. So how can people find out more about Velo Orange? And I guess I'm going to let you go because you got to get up to Boston.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we still got to load up the van and everything. But yeah, we're on all the social medias. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Tumblr, Flickr, MySpace, Snapchat.
Okay, if it's out there, so's Velo Orange.
Yeah, there's no limits to how you can find us.
Okay. Well, Igor, thank you so much for talking with me. Good luck at Builders Ball. I will not be there this year. I'm sorry. I also would like to say thank you for being one of the big sponsors of Builders Ball. I think it's awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well,
it's going to be a really good time. We're really excited.
Yeah, well, as a board member of the East Coast Greenway, we benefit from the Builders Ball, so that's a good thing. Thank you so much.
Oh, right on.
All right.
All right. Thank
Take
you
care.
So much for having me.
Uh-huh.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye. Igor joined me from Annapolis, Maryland, where he was getting ready to skedaddle to Boston. If you're interested in what's up with Velo Orange, you can check practically every social media platform out there. Clearly, they're right on top of things. So let's take another short break, and then we head to bucolic Vermont with a lively chat with Galaxy Gearworks' Ryan Johnson. You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist. We're back. I'm Diane Jenks, and you are listening to The Outspoken Cyclist. After 2 minutes with my next guest, it was abundantly clear how much energy and enthusiasm Ryan Johnson has for his work. I hope you enjoy our conversation. Hi, Ryan. Welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks for joining me on the show today.
Hi, Diane. Thanks for having me.
It is my pleasure. So you have an interesting story brought you where you are today. Give us the Cliff Notes version so we can talk more about Galaxy Gearworks and the work you're doing getting ready for the New England Builders Ball this weekend.
The Cliff Notes version is I'm a lifelong cyclist. I grew up, as most kids do, or a lot of, you know, the fortunate kids in my view, with a bicycle, a hand-me-down one at first, but it didn't matter. It was freedom and glorious. And so I just rode bikes everywhere as a kid and had all the liberty in the world, and I loved it. I strayed away from bicycles when I got my first motorcycle, unfortunately, and then four wheels and high school girls and things like that take you even farther away. But I rediscovered my bike when I was a freshman in college. I got a road bike, and I'd never been on a road bike before in my life, but I started working at a great outdoor store that had a great little bike department called the Pack Ride Outdoor Center in Fayetteville, Arkansas. It's a wonderful store. And met a really great guy there who turned into a fantastic mentor. He was just a self-professed cycling nut, huge fan of European pro road racing, big Euro racing history buff. He had a lot of great coffee table books with these great pictures of the Tour de France. And just working with him in the shop and learning, you know, all the basics, and then how to build wheels and how to prep pro level road frames and do professional bike builds. I was super lucky to fall into that early on and started racing road bikes and just got pretty consumed by that. Got a mountain bike shortly thereafter. And so really haven't looked back. That was 89 or 90 and raced a lot over the years and have ridden a lot of miles and I have just loved it. When I graduated college, I started teaching high school. So I taught high school for 9 years or so, and then met a gal And she's from a neighboring town of mine, but I chased her down to Little Rock, which is from the northwest corner of the state where we're from. We went down to the middle of the state. I got a job with Competitive Cyclist. So sort of stepped back into the cycling industry after that break teaching high school. And I ran a nationwide demo program for Competitive Cyclist for a number of years, as well as wrote technical gear reviews for the mountain bike side of our website at the time. And then transitioned into full-time copywriting position for the company. And I did that for the last couple of years while they were in Little Rock before they got bought by Backcountry.com. We stayed. My wife was in the middle of a PhD program. And I started to work for Orbea USA, which was also located in Little Rock, Arkansas. Worked for those guys for 2 years before I took off on my own and started a mobile bike repair business that operated out of a Sprinter van. And I serviced Central Arkansas and did a lot of really great contract work that took me here and there, you know, like race support, you know, team support, things like that throughout the region, but also some factory warranty work in Canada for Orbea, and then some work in California for Ellsworth Handcrafted Bikes. I was doing that until we moved to Vermont, and my wife took a position at a hospital here in Vermont, and I built us a house. So we bought 11 acres, and so we'd have room to roam around, have our dogs, you know, free and crazy. And then so we built a house. I took about 20 months just working on a house full time. And then we lived in a tiny little thing that was in our garage space. But now we're in the big house and we're happy. Now I've got my garage space all built out, and I'm moving Galaxy Gearworks in the right direction.
So if you're just joining me, I'm speaking with Ryan Johnson. What an interesting lead up to what you're doing now, Galaxy Gearworks in Vermont. Let me ask you a couple of questions about your time in both college and teaching. And
sure.
Then, I mean, you have a great resume to bring you into the bicycle business. What was your field of study in college?
Well, at first I didn't have a field of study. I didn't study very much at all. A pretty bad start, but I took a geology 101 class with an incredible man. He was an awesome professor and really turned my college experience around after taking that class and discovering that I was very much tuned into the earth science side of things. So I ended up getting a Bachelor of Science in Earth Science, and it was very heavy on the geology side of things. So I just really enjoyed that stuff, and I started making, you know, when you're enjoying what you're studying, it's pretty easy to make good grades, passing grades for sure. So I enjoyed that benefit of becoming interested in my classwork at that time. And I taught geology and environmental science at the high school level in my hometown.
It's so interesting how you may do this in college and you do that in your real life, and somehow they intersect. Everything you learned at that college level, high school level, whatever it is, turns out to work for you as you move forward in your everyday work. So tell us about why you decided to move from this sort of bustling real life, maybe you might call it city life, to sort of this solitary life in Vermont, which is, you know, I think a lot of people think about doing that. And a lot of people say, yeah, maybe, and don't do it, but you did it. So what were some of the things that drew you to that? And are you finding it to be everything you wanted it to be?
Oh my gosh, we're in a wonderful place here. Ultimately, when my wife finished her program at the medical school in Little Rock, Arkansas, for those who aren't familiar with the process, it's a numerical match process for a residency position. Those students, like my wife, you go get yourself some interviews at places that you're interested in doing your residency work at. You might do 5, 10, or perhaps even 15 or so. She did almost 15 interviews, and then you rank those locations 1 to whatever, and you submit this rank list, and then the institutions also submit a rank list, and they rank the students that they interviewed. And so the match process puts it all together, some computer voodoo stuff, you know, and then it produces a match, and you find out where you're going to work. And so it's pretty exciting, but it's a bit of a crapshoot. But when we were looking at places that she was going to interview, this position up here in Hanover, New Hampshire, just across the river from us in Norwich, Vermont, here at Dartmouth Hitchcock Medical Center, it was just a really alluring place. It was really high on her rank list. just because we were looking for something different. Like you said, we were in the middle of Little Rock. I had built a house in Little Rock as well. We were renting, but when we realized that her studies were going to keep us there for the better part of a decade, I didn't take much convincing. But I talked her into letting me buy a empty lot. It was a little urban infill project, if you will. We bought a lot that had a house on it in an old neighborhood downtown, but the house had burned down in the 80s or whatever, and it had just been sitting vacant for years and years. And so we built a great little house there, and she was close to school, and it was really convenient and wonderful. And I could ride my bicycle to work at Orbea or competitive cyclist every day. And I drove about 1,500 miles a year in my car. It was awesome. But we were right in the thick of all the action, the city life, if you will. And so to switch gears and move to a rural location and have some acreage and not have a fence, you know, and not be worried about my dog if I let our dogs outside, you know, and they could just run around and sniff and scratch and play and do whatever. That seemed really appealing. And so far, we both really love it.
So what field of study is your wife in?
She's an emergency medicine doc. So,
That's a tough one. Yeah, a little solitude probably helps if you're in a trauma center. Yeah, I would imagine. I got it. So I want to talk about Galaxy Gearworks. And if it's okay with you, if you have a minute, can we take a real short break and we'll be right back?
Sure.
Okay. You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist. We've been speaking with Ryan Johnson from Galaxy Gearworks. We will be right back after a short break. Okay, we're back. If you are just joining us, rewind and hear the beginning of this because it's fascinating. I've been talking with Ryan Johnson from Galaxy Gearworks. He's in Vermont. Didn't start out there, but you go back and listen and you'll find out what's going on. So let's talk a little bit about your frame building and the work that you're doing. Galaxy Gearworks, how'd you come up with that name? That's kind of cool.
That's a great question. I think I was just sitting around trying to decide if I was going to start building bicycles again, what I would call it. But to back up, well, I should just keep going with the name. I was just playing with words and alliteration and stuff like that. I used to do that a lot when I played in a rockabilly band for a number of years.
Nice. What do you play?
Yeah. I played guitar, drums, and bass and all that stuff. But in the band, I played an upright bass and sang songs, if you can imagine that.
Yes, I can.
I used to, you know, goof around with some wordplay and rhyming and with the song craft, and that was always super fun. I just got stuck on Galaxy for some reason, you know, and then when you start thinking about brand names, if you're going to start a business or whatever, of course, you got to get on Google, you got to get on GoDaddy and see if a domain name's available and see if anybody's using it on Twitter and Facebook and Pinterest, you know.
Yep.
You just go through the list. And I found something that was not in use anywhere for any reason. And Galaxy Gearworks, I just liked it. I like the alliteration. It's pretty simple. And it's kind of thinking about future proofing. You know, I thought, oh, I could buy this domain name and I could build bikes, or maybe I could build whatever.
Right.
And the name isn't so targeted because I have a lot of interest, but right now I'm 100% devoted to the bicycle craft.
So interesting. I mean, I think I'm hearing some parallel thinking along the lines of my husband and you. He's sort of this really creative guy too and does all kinds of stuff, but you know, it's basically bicycles right now, but it may not always be that. Right. I get it. So talk a little bit about your bikes. Let's talk about what you're building, how long you've been building, and what's popular about right now in your line.
Well, just to give you a little backstory, when I was in college, again, I met that really great guy, and I got on a team with some really great guys and some very odd, perhaps even eccentric characters. It was super cool experience. Brent Trimble, some of your listeners might know that name. Brent Trimble was the guy who patented the internal bladder molded monocoque laminate technique that Kestrel used in the early 90s. You know, and he's an Arkansan, kind of an out there guy. You know, he's really smart. I've never actually met him, but I'm fascinated by his story. But he's perhaps difficult to get along with, you know, I don't know. Anyway, he left Kestrel, but he started building his own bikes, Trimble mountain bikes, and he built those in Berryville, Arkansas. So I was always geographically close to that. And then some of the older guys on the race team in my local area when I first started racing mountain bikes were riding on the Trimble inverted four carbon bike, and I always thought those were so cool, and I was intrigued by it. And one of the guys that I raced with used to go help Brent do the layups and do some of the finish work and stuff. And he always rode trim bulls, and he was an engineering, a mechanical engineer, and a student anyway. And we would just sit around sometimes on the way to races or whatever, and we'd talk about the way those bikes were laid up or how the mold was made or whatever. I always thought it was really fascinating. And at the time I was paddling whitewater kayaks a lot. In particular, I was paddling squirt boats, which are really low volume, slicey boats made of Kevlar and fiberglass. And when you paddle a squirt boat, it becomes necessary that you become a bit of a backyard composites expert anyway, because you're always like smashing the ends and cracking them up, you know, and they need to be patched and repaired and things like that over time. So I just developed a really keen interest in composites really early, but I also had a hot rod when I was a teenager. So I did a lot of metal fabrication and welding, and my brother was also a huge influence on me. Very patient guy, plan oriented, step by step. He's a master fabricator. So he was an awesome influence. But growing up around all of those kind of things, I couldn't help myself. And I just found myself modifying a Bridgestone MB3 and turning it into a time trial bike, a funny bike for our Galloway, our 40-kilometer state time trial, and went out there and set a PR on that old Franken bike Bridgestone. I started building some complete bikes, road frames. And then as funny as it is, I totally got into soft ride suspension stuff, because, you know, full suspension was nascent, you know, and finicky at the time, and the soft ride beam was effective and super simple. So I built some beam bikes and I thought those are super cool. And as funny as it is to say it now.
Hey, I liked our beam bike, but I rode a commotion with a beam for a while with my husband. I like those bikes.
Yeah. Yeah. They were great. Anyway, at some point trying to build bikes, as a college student, is really difficult when you don't have any money and you don't have the right tooling. It's painstaking and tedious and slow, and you make a lot of mistakes. And when you can't afford to make mistakes, that's a bad combo. So ultimately, I had to just give it up, you know, and finish school. And it was always something that I wanted to get back to. You know, fast forward to 2018, and I had an incredible opportunity that I couldn't not take advantage of. And my wife is super supportive, and she just said, you know, go for it. So here I am.
Here you are building bikes. How are people finding out about your bikes?
I'm right at the inception point here. The people that know about my bikes, for the most part, are people that know me.
Sure.
But I am trying to do my best to generate a lot of social media content, you know, so I do have an affection for photography. So I try to take a lot of pictures of the process and of my shop and the tooling that I've made and the bikes as they're in progress. So I have been posting quite regularly to my Instagram, Galaxy Gearworks Instagram, and that pumps over to my Facebook page. But I'd say for the most part, the interaction that I've been having with let's just say strange people.
As opposed to strangers, right? Exactly.
Yeah. I guess that's the difference, isn't it? Most of my interaction with strangers to me has been through my Instagram.
Interesting.
Yeah. So it's been fun.
So what have you been building? What's been the most popular thing you're building? Gravel bikes, probably.
I had this opportunity in March. I made a huge buy on a big lot of steel and titanium tubing and other gizmos and widgets. So it's a huge commitment for me this year to buy that. But, you know, to back up a little bit, I had helped Tony Carklins, who was my boss at Orbea USA. He sold it to his Spanish partners. And then he started HIA Velo when he had the opportunity to buy all of the Guru assets at auction in Montreal in 2016. And so he hired me, actually, when I was running my own business. I would go to Montreal and manage the teardown of the factory. So I went to Montreal for about 2 weeks and worked with some Canadian riggers and one awesome guy in particular who was a Guru employee who now works for Tony down at Allied in Little Rock. Anyway, we tore down the factory and we shoved everything in that building into these gigantic 50-foot rail containers and shipped it all to Arkansas. And then we pulled all the stuff out of those containers and then rebuilt that factory down in Little Rock. So I'd had my hands on all the metal inventory that Tony bought from Guru up there. And he struggled to find somebody that was going to work out as a fabricator, as a frame builder, to kind of start his, let's say, the metal department at Allied Cycle Works. They were going full blaze with the composite side of things. And to be honest, most of his value in terms of his purchase and the existing inventory from that guru buy was in the composite side of things. Probably his best bet for quick return on his investment. And so his priority was the carbon fiber stuff, but he also had a strong desire to get a titanium gravel bike to market, but it just never worked out. It didn't materialize. And I kept hearing through the grapevine through friends and then finally cemented this rumor at the North American Handmade Bike Show last year in Connecticut that he was going to put all that stuff up for sale and like liquidate all his metal inventory stuff. And so we just struck a deal. He accused me of being bored up here. And I told him that wasn't the case. I was just inspired. And so we made a deal that was, I felt like it was a great deal for both of us. And I bought everything he had at a fair price. I am fully committed to making something out of all that material. Thus far, I've built a couple of gravel bikes. I built myself a really nice hardtail mountain bike. It's a bit non-traditional.
Yeah, looking at some of the pictures, I can see that you have this sort of design quality in your bikes that you don't see everywhere. I kind of like it, actually.
I like the way that mountain bike rides, to be honest with you. I bypassed the seat tube with the seat stays, and they tie up into the top tube. And there's, to be totally honest with you, I borrowed some inspiration from Jeff Jones with his space frame. I just did it a little bit differently in terms of the way the stays and the top tube all lay out, but the notion is the same, that I have tried to design in some small degree of deflection in the seat tube along the entire length of the seat tube so that, you know, you feel a greater degree of comfort when you're smashing, through a rocky riverbed in the saddle. It's effective. It works. It's really great. And to no detriment, you know, when you get out of the saddle and stand on that thing, it's the same old hardtail and just rips right up the climbs, you know?
Once again, let me remind our listeners, this will probably be the last time before the end of our conversation, that I am speaking with Ryan Johnson, Galaxy Gear Works. By the time you hear this, he will have seen all of you who will be at Builders Ball, and you may or may not have stopped by his booth. But if you're hearing this and didn't get to Builders Ball, you can go to Galaxy Gear Works Instagram account and see some of the stuff we're talking about, which is really nice. There's even a tandem out there. Did you build that tandem?
The tandem, yeah, the one that's on the wall there.
Well, I'm looking at that. Yeah, the white. Is it white? Is that what I saw? Hang on.
It's actually aluminum and carbon.
Nice.
My wife and I, we had some dear friends who the guy was one of the founders of Competitive Cyclist, and they moved to Park City when Backcountry bought Competitive Cyclist. We hated to lose them. They were awesome. But we had been talking about everybody getting tandem bikes, you know, and going and racing these marathon length gravel events or, you know, like mountain bike events on tandems. And it was going to be a head to head battle, you know, friendly rivalry and all that.
Right.
It was super neat. So we built that bike to go to Leadville. And so we raced Leadville on that tandem. Oh, my God, it was so hard.
Yeah, it's hard enough on a single. I don't know what you were thinking.
Yeah. You know, we're not any faster on the tandem, that's for sure. But
been there.
But it's a great bike. My wife, I hope this is okay for radio, for the podcast. My wife likes to call it Long Dong Silver.
Nice. It's
super
fine.
Funny.
That's great. That's great. I love it. I love it. Since I won't be there this year, we were there last year, what would I have seen at Builder's Ball had I been there? What are you taking with you?
At Builder's Ball, well, I'm gonna clean up my mountain bike that I've been beating up 3 or 4 days a week.
Yeah, they look good, though, when we know they've been ridden. That's okay.
Figure it's going to have some scuffs and some nicks and scratches on it, but I'm going to clean it up properly and make it look nice.
Okay.
So I'll take my mountain bike. I'll take I have a gold gravel bike with a bunch of really sweet Chris King stuff all over it. It's really pretty. And that one was, that gold gravel bike was one that people really liked on Instagram. I got a lot of positive feedback from that. But the one that's new that I built specifically for the Builder's Ball Show is I built a pump track bike.
Did you? How interesting.
Yeah. I helped build a local pump track here in Norwich, in my hometown in Vermont here, a couple summers ago. And I helped with an after-school MTB kids program. And we take the kids to the pump track, you know, almost every week, and they love it. So that's pretty cool. And I love it. We just need to make it a little bit bigger. for the big kids, you know?
Right. I always wonder like why they have such cool stuff for kids, like shoes that light up when they walk. Why don't they have this stuff for adults? It's ridiculous, really ridiculous.
Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, we need to wrap this up. It's been a lot of fun. So one more time, it's Ryan Johnson, Galaxy Gearworks. I always ask my guests three questions. One, we already have an answer to, but I'm going to find out more. What's your favorite food?
Probably Mexican food at this point, because that's what I'm going to say now, because I just cannot get Mexican food up here in the Upper Valley in Vermont. Right. It just doesn't exist, so I'm desperate for it.
Got it. What music do you like to listen to?
Oh, gosh. Rock and roll for sure. But if I was getting specific, I'd say I bounce around between heavy metal. But then I'll listen to some rockabilly or some Ernest Tubb or something like that, you know, to just balance it out.
Well, we already know that you have pets. So tell us a little bit about your dog or dogs.
Oh, two pound puppies. Yeah, a couple of little ladies. We got both of them from kill shelters. You know, we feel like we saved them. So that makes me feel good all the time. But they're wonderful little companions. They're great on the trail. They love the freedom and the liberty up here, just roaming around and laying in the sun. And they remind me of Snoopy, if you remember the cartoons when you were growing up, when, you know, Charles Schulz would draw him, and he would do such a good job of drawing Snoopy on his back, like thrashing around with his legs in the air.
Right.
That's what my dogs do in the sunny grass outside. And I look out and I see them thrashing on their back, and it just makes me giggle.
Well, I really appreciate you taking time. I know you're getting ready for Builder's Ball, and I hope you have a wonderful time there in Boston. It's not going to be like Vermont, I promise you.
Yeah, I'm very much looking forward to it. As much as anything else, I'm really excited about meeting all the other builders and getting some good ideas and learning something. It'll be great.
You know, everybody I talk with who goes to these shows, whether it's NABS or the Builder's Ball, always say the same thing. It's about the relationships you form with the other builders. And that's so cool. I really like that sort of frame builder community. I think it's really cool.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to it. I don't know enough about it because I'm new, but I do have a sense that I'll feel very welcome there, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Well, thanks so much for talking with me. Have a great time in Boston, and good luck with Galaxy Gearworks.
Thanks, Diane.
All right. You take care.
Hey, bye.
Bye. My thanks to Ryan Johnson for a fun conversation, and thanks also to both Victoria Busi and Igor Stenbuk for joining me on the show this week. I hope you enjoyed the show, and remember, you can always join the conversation on our Facebook page. You can send us a tweet at Outspoken Cyclist without an E, and check out our blog at OutspokenCyclist.com. Next week, it's a conversation with Mike Flanagan from ANT, A-N-T, as well as a look at Florida's advocacy organization, Pedal Power Promoters. Thanks for listening. I hope you have a great week. Happy fall equinox. Stay safe, and remember, if you have a chance, go for a ride. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us today on The Outspoken Cyclist with Diane Jenks. We hope you enjoyed this week's show and welcome your comments and thoughts on Twitter and Facebook. Visit OutspokenCyclist.com to hear this and all past shows. We'll be back next week with more great conversation and news from the world of cycling. Remember, you can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or Stitcher and never miss an episode. The Outspoken Cyclist is a copyrighted production of DBL Promotions with the assistance of WJCU-FM Cleveland, a service of John Carroll University. Thanks again for listening, ride safely, and we'll see you next week.